Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career, so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
Welcome to the Julia and Gino podcast, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneur life looks like from a family perspective. We are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro. Hey everyone, this is Julia Barbaro, host of the Julia and Gino podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
Hey, Joel. Hey, how you doing?
I'm great.
I am excited for today's guest. He's been on the Jake and Gino show. He is the author of Restoring Reason. He helps aspiring scholars properly pursue a self-taught education in critical thinking in order to take responsibility and ownership of their own minds. Welcome back, Dr. T, Dr. Travis Corcoran. How you doing?
Good, man. It's great to be back. Good to see you again, man.
So let me put the book up for everybody on YouTube, Restoring Reason. My wife read it in a day. So if my wife can read it in a day, there's no excuse for all of you out there not to be able to read it. It's a great introductory into what the trivium is. We're going to dive into the trivium. Let's get back to a little bit of logic and reasoning and understanding and to be able to debate like adults, invite conflict with respect. That's what I've been taught a few months ago. And I'm like, that makes sense. So Dr. T, you just want to share your story with everybody, you know, what inspired you to write the book and, you know, what you're doing right now as far as business.
The book, I was inspired to write it just because, not only in my own profession, like we just spoke about, I'd like to see reason restored in my own profession. But outside of that, you know, we all live together. We share the planet together. I'd like to see reason restored to politics, to relationships, to healthcare, to policies, to business. I don't know any successful business people that make rash emotional decisions. Successful business people, I mean, we're all emotional. You know, I wake up with passion for my business, but how I steer the business is based on reason. I don't know anyone that, like, I'm sure there's some lightning strikes every now and then, but someone makes a rash decision, hits it big, but that is not predictable success. And fast success based on emotion doesn't really build character. It may build ego. So I wanted to restore reason. And like you said, too, I want to restore it to discussions. In fact, I'd like there to be an end to debates, because debates are competitions with an implied winner and loser. But a discussion, if done properly, has two winners, right? Because they're concerned on which concept or principle prevails, which one's superior, not which one I hold or I'm attached to. And that means whether I'm presenting a concept or principle, you present a superior one, I did not lose. I'm now wiser because I now have the superior concept as well.
I want everyone to rewind that back. And that was what you just said there. It was really enlightening. Even to me, as you're saying it, I can feel my ego and myself saying, I want to be right. Mm-hmm. And that's how most people are. I need to read this quote here because it's really important. What reason is? I want everyone to write this down because this is truly important. This is the theme of this show. And I think the theme of Dr. T's book, it's the power of the mind to think, understand, and form judgments by a process of logic. Do you want to expand upon that? Because that's really, really important. That's really the crux of what we're trying to do with restoring reason.
Yeah, like I said, emotions are, you know, they're unavoidable. They're automatic. That's why they're called emotional reactions. But reasoning, by thinking with logic, that is what gives stability to our lives, right? Because logic and reason follows rules. It's systematic, reliable, stable, repeatable. Mm-hmm. And that's what you want in business. That's what you want for your children. That's what you want for your relationships. I want my relationships to be stable, right? But with emotions, you know, to base anything on emotion is crazy. I'm not saying emotions are bad. It's just that's not the function they serve. Emotions don't determine truthhoods and falsehoods, right? I feel strongly about this. That doesn't make something true. Mm-hmm. So reason is that we need that coupled with emotion. And again, why I wrote this book, we live in a very emotionally toxic world. Emotions are great, but you can't have too much, just like watering a plant. I don't do it with a fire hose. That's just too much. And I want to bring reason back because it's been like you guys homeschool your children. What a great idea, because it's being slowly picked away out of our schools. Mm-hmm. In the place of, like, what I think Julie and I talked about this at the end of the Jake show. It's more like social and emotional learning. So they're encouraging and engendering, like, extremeness, And that's not stable because your emotions change minute to minute. I mean, you guys could say a few choice words to me and compliment me, make me feel like so good, or you could really bring me down. You know, emotions change. The rules of reason and logic do not. They are stable and reliable. That's why they're so powerful for a business, for a relationship, for healthcare, everything.
You just define me. I'm stable and I'm reliable, bro. Boy. So that's great. I like that, everybody.
Because I keep letting you talk. That's why. You know, I want to get, you had mentioned children. You had mentioned raising a family, relationships. And you know, this all starts at home because we all were raised by parents. Maybe they were just, you know, argued on emotion constantly. And we've all experienced that, other people. You know, one of my daughters, Veronica, when we are arguing or someone else is arguing, she literally says, "Can I go home now?" That's her phrase. She hates to be in that situation of the emotion going back and forth. And it's so interesting, but it's a good topic to talk about, is starting from the parents in the home. How are we interacting? I love how you said, let's not look at debate, let's look at discussion, because I agree with you. We could become more wise, like you said, if we just take the time and listen to the other side. And I want to, let's talk about that a little bit, if you don't mind, Travis. I want to talk about, you know, even the marriage, on how to have a discussion with your spouse, or maybe Gino can talk about it without getting emotional, because it's funny that between the both of us, he's actually the more emotional. I mean, let's just be honest.
I'm needy. I'm emotional. I went from being stable and logical to being needy and emotional. I'm Italian. I mean, like,
he's Italian. Italian. He's passionate.
I picked up on that passion on the Jake and Gino show. I was like, this guy, oh, he's got passion. I could feel it, man.
Well, Dr. Travis, honestly, the passion comes from this. When I say stupidity or laziness, that really bothers me more than anything else. And I get passionate about that because people make excuses. And I think logic denotes that we need to be responsible for our lives. And a lot of people pass off the responsibility. You're in the health field. Be responsible for your health. Be responsible for what you're putting in your mouth.
But it takes a person to actually say, I was wrong. Yeah. Wow, I never thought of it on your side. And that's what it takes. We're in this selfish world where we want to be right. Even if we know we're wrong, we still want to argue our point.
I messed you up. What was your question? I just jumped in there.
He was asking about the children and how we should start with the children, which I agree. That's why they're called, like, they're not called the formative years. By happenstance, right? They're the formative years because they're learning emotionally, mostly by imitation. So so many people say, I don't want to end up like my mother or father, but like when your stress is over your threshold of rationality and you have no choice but to react, you will likely react in the way that your parents did and what you observed in those first 7 years. Like how my parents respond to something funny, something sad, something. So I am like a mirror image of that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the best we can do, because emotions are automatic, the best we can do if there's something you want to change is that you can work on how you manage those emotions, but it's very difficult to undo something that was created in those first 7 years, those formative years. And by what you guys are doing is fantastic. I mean, the homeschooling, focus on discussion, rational discussion, right? And that's how they're acquiring knowledge, not just empirically, but rationally as well. That is the best start for a child, because sending them off to a compulsory state mandated, I'm using the term education loosely, schooling, they're not really learning. I've talked about this with some people just not too long ago. In school, there is no opportunity to learn because there is no discernment. There's no two sides, no two stories. It's like, hey, this is what happened in history class, 1492, Columbus did this, blah, blah. It's just a narrative. And in every aspect, in every course, which they're all compartmentalized as well. And you go around like Pavlov's dog, according to a bell, marching in order. Mm-hmm. It is not education by any means. Education only occurs when I have two things and I have to discern between two. There was something that Gino said at the beginning about conflict. That is very necessary for children. They need healthy conflict. They need to know how to enter conflict, resolve conflict, healthy. Conflict clarifies. Without it, you're just a believer or a zealot, because there's the one narrative. Anything outside of it, we must shun that, you know. But the kids now, it's very difficult. There's a prize for everything. They don't know what it's like to deal with loss or conflict and competition in a healthy way. We've just lost all respect for that.
Enter the Barbaro household. Conflict everywhere because we are competing. I crushed my daughter last night in chess. Competing. So I just wanted to know.
He's the only one in the house that competes. I just want to go there again. You are really okay. This is funny. This is a good podcast.
Needy. I'm competitive. I'm like illogical.
Well, you give us some tips? Can you give the listeners some little tips on? And I do want everyone to get The Restoring Reason. Your book is really incredible and, you know, super eye-opening and helpful, even as a mother in the home. Can you give everyone tips on restoring that at home?
Yeah.
Because like I said, as a mom, sometimes you do go off emotion because they're tired. There's a lot going on. Yeah. There's a lot of people talking to you all the time. And sometimes you do run off emotion and then your kids also do as well. So give us some tips.
The first thing is everything's easier to do when you have a purpose. So when your purpose is clearly defined, it's hard to get burnt out and depressed because you know, you wake up every day, this is my purpose, I'm going to fulfill it. When I create goals, those goals must be fulfill this purpose. And then I create habits that fulfill, that makes me a kind of person to create those goals. But I would say the first thing I would do if I were a parent is what you guys have already done. The parent has to be incredibly informed about why they're doing what they're doing and why it's so necessary. And the best way to do that is to read that book that you just showed me that from John Taylor Gatto. There's nothing to fix if you don't understand there's a problem first. And like Gino was saying before we jumped on this podcast, he says, this book is very depressing. Yeah, of course. And that's what gives you the motivation to something must be done about this. That's the fire that should burn inside you. Like, my children are my responsibility, right? And I want to impart that onto them. So reading that book is like a great like motivator. Something must be done. But I always recommend the book, that other one you got there. That is probably my all-time favorite book in the world. And I would say, like, if you're homeschooling children, that is the ultimate textbook as they enter, like, I'll recommend another book for you. But as they get to that sophomoric phase, like 12 to 14, that book should be, in my opinion, the primary focus. But like what Gino said, and that's why like I wrote the book in the way that I did, is because that book by Sister Miriam Joseph is so dry, but it is packed full of just value, right? Mm-hmm. It's just not delivered in a very attractive way. And people don't understand, how's that going to affect my life? And that's why I wrote my book the way I did. It's very easy to read. Like Gino said, it's just the perfect primer for this like very hard study or lesson that Sister Miriam Joseph brings out. I would do those books in that order.
So let's get this. Restoring Reason, number one. And number two is Dumbing Us Down. And number three is The Trivium by Sister Miriam. Now, we did the same thing, I think, on our podcast. Can you just define what the trivium is really quick and have people understand what it is? I know it's one of the seven liberal arts. If we can go into those three, just real quick and give a recap of them, because it's really important for parents to hear what they are.
That's the other book I want to recommend for you guys too. It's only like 25 pages. It was originally a speech that was transcribed to an essay by Dorothy Sayers. It's called The Lost Tools of Learning by Dorothy Sayers, S-A-Y-E-R-S. But the trivium classically is knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. And so the first liberal art is really concerned with how you construct your statements, how you define your words, right? The order that the words go in. So it's constructing a statement, and that first liberal art is concerned with correctness. Is it correct or incorrect? So it's information, knowledge, data, evidence, which that's all it is. And we talked that knowledge is not power. The second liberal art, understanding, that's where logic and reason come in. That is not the construction of a statement, but using statements to construct an argument. And an argument is defined as a minimum of three statements, one of which is the conclusion, and the two or more other statements are premises for to derive that conclusion. So that's the second liberal art, the construction of your argument or claim. Is it follow the rules, and are there any contradictions? Is it errors of reason, logical inconsistencies? That's the second liberal art, understanding, logic, and reason. And to me, that's what real power is. Right? Just the first liberal art, hey, I'm informed. Okay. The second liberal art, that is personal empowerment. And then the third liberal art, wisdom or rhetoric, or the expression of the first two. How effectively do you express knowledge and understanding? Now, you already have self-empowerment when you understand something, but when you can properly express it, now you have influence that will make you successful in a relationship, in business, but in whatever endeavor.
And I wish I had met you 10 years ago, because as we were homeschooling, I felt a little inadequate. And what you had said on the Jake and Gino show is really important for me to repeat. It's the three R's. The super elites are teaching us, teaching their children reading, writing, and reckoning, as Sister Miriam says. And go through that, because I think that's the genesis of, if you're schooling your kids, or even if they're going to school and they're coming back home, if you could focus on those three, that will really create the basis for that. So can you go over those three real quick for the listeners?
Yeah, John Taylor Gatto discusses this brilliantly too. And if there's time, I'll share a great story from him as well. But it is read, write, and reckoning, or debate, right? Read, write, and debate. And reading, like, this is the, John Taylor Gatto talks about these people. These are like the elite, elite, elite schools, right? There's no chance you're ever getting in there, to be honest. And what they do is they read, because reading is the best form of acquiring knowledge. It also teaches patience as well, and discipline. So reading is how they acquire knowledge. Writing is how they practice the second liberal arts, which is they have to write like a thesis or construct their arguments. So now you're being creative, constructing your arguments and make arguments, making sure there's no inconsistencies in the logic, no errors in the reason, or no formal fallacies of the form or structure of argument. And then debating, testing your ability or your effectiveness at communicating those things. That's the third liberal art. It's only concerned with effectiveness. It's not concerned with whether something's correct, true, or false. Those are the first liberal arts. The third liberal art is solely concerned with how effective do I communicate this, whether it's true, false, correct, incorrect. And that's all the elite study. Read, write, debate, and then they do it again. Read, write, debate.
Do you want to share your story with Dr. Gatto? I'd love to hear it.
Yeah. John Taylor Gatto. I heard this once. He was, as you know, it was like 3 years in a row, or at least three times, he was elected or selected as Teacher of the Year in like New York City. Like, that's tough, man. Right. So this guy is like prestigious, highly credentialed by like academia, which is one of the institutions I'm criticizing in my book. And he does as well. And the story he told was about how he figured all this out and left. And what it was, in an interview, he was talking about how an 11-year-old student or 10-year-old student was telling him, explaining a story about how his grandfather told him how flea circuses were done. How do you get these little fleas to carry around tiny miniature Roman chariots and to walk on a trapeze? How do you get these fleas to do that? Well, you put them in a glass jar. And if you put them in a glass jar, they just fly out and go about flea business. But then you put a lid on that. And what they do is they bump into each other, they fight, and then they find the limits of the jar. And eventually you can take the lid off. You can even take away the jar, because their will has been broken and they just stay right there. Mm-hmm. And the moment he realized that his job in the education system, that he was hired to be a lid on the jar, is when he handed in his resignation. And it's his speech, the final time he was selected as Teacher of the Year. That speech, man, that could have been heard across the world, because it was the most condemning speech of our education system or school system that I'd ever heard. And it was just on point too.
Isn't it amazing that someone did something for 30 years and had the courage and had the bravery to say, I've been living a sham life for the last 30 years. And it's almost like right now, going through COVID, after 2 years, some things are being replaced. And if people have the will that for the last 2 years, they've been sold a bill of goods, and some of those goods were right and some of those goods were wrong. Well, I mean, let's say for masks, for instance, did they work? Did they not work? After 2 years, everyone's like, oh, they don't work now. But for the last 2 years, I've been getting yelled at to put one on now. Are we going to admit that maybe they were wrong about certain science and all? So I give him a ton of credit after 30 years of life's work to be trying to do the best he could. And I think his whole thing was he empowered a lot of students and he changed a lot of lives. So he could be happy and he could be proud about that. But maybe the system that he was in, maybe wasn't the system that he wanted to be.
He is the absolute, like, he is the greatest evidence that it's never too late to change your mind. Mm-hmm. And that, like, what you're saying right now too, the admiration for that, because we all know how difficult it is to say I was wrong, and to do it after 30 years too. I forgot the most compelling part of that story. He said, like, flea circuses, they were like, to quote, he said, the delight of emperors. So he's like, back in Roman times, 1600 BC, I don't know, whatever. Back in Roman times, they used those same principles to train military troops. They break their wills. I mean, I was a military man. I went to boot camp, shave our heads. We're all wearing the same clothes. They break your will, strip your identity. Those same tactics were used for military personnel. And then it was the Prussian model of schooling along. And now it's for the citizenry to have an allegiance to the state. And what he said at the end was what really shook me to the core. He said, all this was done without the information distribution systems we have now, all the technology we have today, and no TV, no radio. He goes, do you think that all these principles have just been lost, or have they only become more sophisticated? And over time, more and more power gets leveraged into fewer and fewer hands. Do you think that all this was just forgotten, or has it just become so much more incredibly sophisticated? That hit me like, oh, he's so right. We don't even know how much we've been deceived, manipulated.
Well, that's, you know, it takes courage to stand up and to do what it might take years for you to realize this is not what I thought it was. And it does take courage to actually stand up and talk about it. Because a lot of us just go along with it because we don't want to be the one that says something and no one else agrees with us. And we're just standing there by ourselves. You know what I mean? But the important thing is where we're getting our knowledge from. You know, my mom always said, if you want to know about Christopher Columbus, read his own writing. Don't read about someone that wrote about him, you know, years and years later that never knew him. And so where we get our knowledge is so important. And you mentioned the school district. Here's the history you're learning. You have to take what we're saying as accurate. So let's talk about where people are getting knowledge from about everything, about COVID, about whatever's going on now and what we're doing with that.
I think we've become so intellectually passive and lazy. In fact, I'll tell you I think Jake and Gina would both love this. Mm-hmm. One of the, like someone wrote a criticism of my book saying like, oh, he doesn't give any references. And I was like, exactly. You know, Pythagoras didn't give any references when he made his deductions and conclusions. Neither did Descartes when he did. That's the thing. We have become so incredibly dependent upon authority. Like, well, what's the authority say? See, I can't draw my own conclusions. I can't even listen to other people draw their own conclusions. Where's the authority? Where's the authority? Where's the reference? Where did you get this from? It had to come from somewhere. People can't derive their own knowledge, right? That was to me, I was like, this is someone who's just not getting the material of the book, that is so like the Stockholm syndrome is like chronic. It's just not like, we need an authority. Nothing's true without the say of the authority. Where's your reference?
And you know what bothers me more than anything else is the experts. Where are the experts? Number one. And number two, the experts is I've always been wrong. Since COVID started in my business, people weren't going to pay rent. Valuations were going to drop. There aren't going to be any deals. And everything has happened the opposite. Now they're talking about inflation and it's the boogeyman. We need a boogeyman out there, whether it's the war in Ukraine, whether it's COVID, whether it's 2008, the Great Recession, whether it's the bankers, whether it's, there's always seems to be that. And let me backtrack one second before. My wife is talking about standing up to people. Throughout COVID, she had somebody. She wasn't wearing a mask. They weren't yelling at her. They were yelling at me who was wearing the mask. So she's Miss Bravery out there.
I feel like everyone's afraid of me. I don't know why. I walk in, and my husband gets yelled at.
I get yelled at. I mean, of course, I'd be brave if I was standing up and someone wasn't yelling at me, but was yelling at my spouse. I'd be like rushing in there and going, it's her fault. So it was great during COVID. But I'm sorry, you were going to say something because to me, it's important. You were talking about where the experts, who are the experts out there?
Well, here's the thing, man. I'll tell you if you want to know who the experts are, anyone that is criticizing thinking for yourself, they're the self-proclaimed experts, right? They want you hooked on the fish. They don't want to teach you to fish. That's the way I see it, right? And I see this so much. Like anyone that's critical of this, my whole book is critical of those five big institutions. So academia, big government, Hollywood, social tech, social media. And if you want to know like who is going to stand against this work or thinking for yourself, are people that are highly credentialed within those institutions, legacy media, academia. Do you think they're going to have anything positive to say about a book or your podcast or anything that is condemning what they do? Mm-hmm. Right. They are all their authority is dependent upon our belief in these big institutions like legacy, like mainstream media, legacy media, academia, big universities. If you're highly credentialed there and you have all the esteem and the awards, do you think that they're going to listen to this podcast, listen to John Taylor Gatto, or read my book and not have incredible criticisms? Like the mental gymnastics they're going to go through to set no references. or he glibly dismisses experts. And it's crazy.
Well, it's interesting. I had mentioned this on a previous podcast, I think with Will Witt, is that we're taught in school, we're not allowed to question anything. And we all remember those people in school that would ask a question and get sent out of the room because, well, you're going against the teacher. And so we're taught that, right? We're taught that in school, don't question authority. You're not allowed to think for yourself. And that's why I do love homeschooling. It is exhausting, let me tell you, because everyone in my house questions everything we do.
It's easy for me.
They're like, Dad's coming. Everyone get your books out.
That is so true, by the way.
It's reality.
And it's like, okay, it's guys, reality. What do you guys do? But you know what?
I teach them life skills too, remember, okay?
So questions are good. Questions, I always look at questions, what they are, it's just an intellectual searchlight. Mm-hmm. When you ask a question, you've turned on the searchlight. You're looking to learn. Mm-hmm. Questions are so good, but it's true what you say. We're punished if we ask mm-hmm. questions.
And to have children, you know, you don't have to homeschool to do this because your kids come home and ask us questions. And most of the time we just answer with, you know, that's because I said so, or one of these answers. And we're not forming our children to question, to find out the answer, to maybe go to another source and say, let me find out, hey, kids, why don't you find out that answer? Because I don't know either. Why don't we look at it together? So it does open up a great conversation as a family to look for the source, look for the things that we believe in. Why are we this way? Why do we believe this? Let's find out. Let's give the kids answers. But what I really, really want to get to is, you know, we're talking about getting information, thinking logically, being able to talk amongst ourselves. What happens, this has been it's been prevalent. Too much lately, when the other person you're talking to is literally running off emotion and you're trying to have just a regular discussion with them. And it's like something is happening. Like they just can't understand what you're talking about. You're just asking a question and they answer you based off emotion. You know what I mean? Nowadays.
I think we talked about this a little bit before, but the first thing recognize where first you have to make sure, like, am I being reasonable? Yeah. And yes. If you're calm, then the next thing to do when to proceed with someone who's highly emotional, can't calm down or seemingly can't, is to continue with genuine inquiry. Not like I think we talked before, like not, you know, a question is like, who do you think you are? That's not a genuine question. Like, hey, we may disagree, but I really want to understand how you draw those conclusions, where you're coming from. Is it okay to ask a few questions? Start like trying to tune them to your calmness and keep asking questions, because it's very difficult for people. They'll get tired. It's very difficult to think and react at the same time. And when you're asking questions, you're forcing them into thinking. And that's, they have to reduce their emotion. They have to, okay. The anger will reside just or shut down for even a moment, just like, well, I have to think my answer. Keep the questions coming. Inquiry with compassion is the best way to, I think, it doesn't mean you're going to win, which you shouldn't be trying to win anyway, but you're just trying to diffuse the situation, understand where they're coming from, so that any future interaction you can better plan and prepare. Because if you're a thoughtful person, that's what you're doing. You'll take as much time as you need for a response. What you were saying just before this too, I think, is also like one of the most underutilized things that people do, and you're doing it with your kids, is say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That, to me, that's one of the most powerful answers you can give it. I don't know. Let's find out.
Every day. I say that 15 times a day. So
well, a lot of people have a hard time to say that because they do want to be the authority. They do want to be the parent that knows everything, which makes me laugh half the time because my kids really know that I don't know much. You know, they went from thinking I knew everything. Maybe Dad knows everything now. I don't know. To, you know, I'm not sure if Mom knows. Let's find out together. And so I do, you know, being real in the house is important. And I want the kids to know that, you know, we're just trying to figure this out together. And, you know, I love learning with them, but they do need to see that their authority is the mother and the dad sometimes don't know. And I think that's helpful because then they grow up with this thought that they need to know everything when they become a parent.
Julia, do you mind if I go back a minute from where you're talking about? This is important for parents because schooling, I just had an epiphany as you were talking. In schooling, we're not taught to ask empowering questions: who, what, when, where, how. Mm-hmm. Those are really the crux. If you want to be a salesperson, if you want to be a leader, you need to be able to ask those questions and to understand it. And the other part is teamwork. Any company or any entity that works well within a team that can work together really succeeds. And if you're cheating in school, it's you're going to get kicked out of the class. You're going to fail. But when Jake and I cheat amongst each other and we have other people in business, we're geniuses. We're ripping off and duplicating. Yeah. We succeed at exactly. So when people are looking at it, if they're thinking of homeschooling and all, oh, think of it from that perspective. I mean, we're teaching our kids to work together, work in conjunction, asking questions, going out and debating. And in school, that's the opposite. So now when you graduate with a degree and you come out and you don't know how to ask those questions, or you don't know how to say, I don't know, let me go look, you're really behind the eight ball.
Well, I think
you're
it's a pride thing as well. Yeah. And like working as a team, because we do talk to a lot of through Jake and Gino, through the, we have a couples coaching, and a lot of Gino students do work together. They work in real estate together, and it is, you know, half the time they start in competition and they're working against each other because they want to be able to do the best job. Even though my husband has different gifts than I do, well, I want to be better than him. And so there's this competition when you're talking about teamwork.
I'm a better singer. That's all I'm saying.
And I'm okay saying that. He's really good.
He's really good. All right. Really, I got that on camera. Wow. I got that recorded. So
the kids
a couple gold stars today. You know?
I'm a little needy, she said, but I'll take.
But you know that, and that's why I love you, because you deep down you know that. Even years ago, it was. That's what I want to say is years ago. You know, we've grown a lot, and as adults, we have to say, okay, you know what? I was like that years ago. I don't want to be like that. So what am I going to do to get over my, you know, competitiveness with my spouse or even with our kids? A lot of us have it with our children, is we want to be competitive. We want to be better. We could go there if you want, but you should see him play chess with the kids. Oh boy.
Well, it's no mercy. I want the reality of life. When you go out in life, you're not, and I'm not saying first or second place.
Well, I don't mean let them win.
And I have a growth. Course. I have a growth mindset. My mindset is, if you want to be in first place, let's not take away from that person winning first place. If you're in fifth place, it's okay. You still did a great job. But let's not deny that that person worked harder or is even more successful than you were. Yes. How do you get to that place? Like, you need to work harder. You need to put in more time. And I don't want them to say, oh, well, you know, I don't want that. I want them to get some kind of fortitude.
I think that's what the school did years and years ago. And we kind of made fun of it, everyone, where no one won first place or something like that. And it just teaches the kid, you know, it doesn't matter if you do better than the other person. It doesn't matter if you put in all that hard work and that knowledge for whatever it is you're doing. And I think that also takes away what we're talking about as well, is to be able to, I want to learn more. I want to be wise. I want to get that knowledge. If you want to talk about that, I'd love to hear what your thoughts are.
I'll bring it back to emotion, because like people always say, oh, you talk so much about logic and reason, Travis, but what do you have against emotion? Nothing. I love emotion. However, I think we don't have a good understanding of it. Like, for instance, jealousy. When someone, you talked about coming in fifth place, jealousy is quite healthy. Envy is, that's
different.
That's horrible. Jealousy is a good thing. Like, oh man, that first place, I'm jealous. I would like that as well. Hey, you have a nice car, nice home. I'm jealous. I would like that as well. That's what jealousy drives people. Envy, well, that's destructive. Like, I don't want anyone to have it because I can't have it. And they very.
I hope he gets into an accident with that really nice car.
Yeah. It's different. Evil.
Yeah.
I hope he loses his voice when he's singing.
And so like jealousy, anger, fear, these things, like we live in this, like this, like I talked before, this postmodernist world where we just want to ignore the negative. But fear is not a negative thing. If you're like antelope and you see a lion, like fear, when a prey sees a predator, fear is what keeps you alive. Yeah. Fear is how you know to act and react. Anger is, you should have. I mean, if Gino just struck me unprovoked and I didn't get angry, something's wrong with me, right? Anger, fear, they don't need to be ignored. They need to be understood.
Yes.
And like same with jealousy. But we're doing everything we can to sedate our kids and protect them from all this stuff. And it's impossible, because it's just an absolute denial of reality. And we need to understand it, not avoid it.
Yeah, I like that.
There's so many more questions. I'd really love to dive into it. If just you want to take us home, as far as, you know, next step for parents, like I said, Restoring Reason, it's a great book. I mean, I read it in a couple of days. My wife says she read it in a day. And that's why we're so excited to get you back on, because it really is for the parents. Parents don't know where to turn. I mean, all of a sudden COVID opened everyone's eyes.
Parents, but also just people in general. And I think that's important, is just have relationships just in general, not even parents.
And I, you know, I'm going to bring back the debate versus discussion. To me, that's the most important thing that I've heard in a podcast in years, because it seems that sometimes I want to win and I want to be able to say, hey, my thought is better than yours, but let's have an open debate. But the problem nowadays is everyone gets shut down because you're either racist, you're homophobic or something. And then you can't even make that. You can't even have. So what that says to me is their arguments are not anywhere near where the other person's arguments are. Because if you can't debate the person and you start calling name calling, then you should look within and say, well, why am I calling this person a name? Let me at least hear his arguments. Let me counter argue and see whose ideas are better. Because that's what we want in life. Well, the better the ideas, you had mentioned the quality of your mind leads to the quality of the decisions, leads to the quality of your life. So if you want to have a great life, be open-minded. If someone has a better idea, a better solution, go towards that and your life is going to be so much better.
Yeah. And I know that you wanted to wrap this up, but I want to get your thoughts on truth, because that's, to me, when we talk about objective truth, you know, it doesn't matter if you, whether you know it, like it, or believe it, the truth is there. And I think that's something that we also have to think about when we're in a situation. If you want to touch on that, I would love to hear your thoughts.
Well, so you guys brought up so many good things. I'd love to touch on all of it, but, the truth is very simple. People like talk about it all the time, but they've never really defined it. Mm-hmm. Truth is simple. It's a principled statement that conforms to reason and usually supported by evidence. Mm. A principled statement that conforms to reason. That's the truth. And a lot of people, they can try and deny it all they want, but deny for me the truth of gravity. Jump off the building and tell me how quick objective reality smacks you in the face, right? The truth is there. It is objective. One of the things we can do, going back to what Gino was saying too, is to avoid this, like, I want to win. Because we all get that feeling to a degree. And that's because we're attaching ourselves to our perspectives. So I would say, instead of like, here's my perspective, I would say, here's a perspective. Instead of using possessive pronouns before belief, idea, perspective, it's better to use like an indefinite article, a or an or the, like that or that perspective, this perspective. And that's how we get out of the debate mode into the discussion, how we both really win and we come closer. There's a lot to learn. I'll never know and understand everything. No one will, but I love to get as close as I can to the truth, because I know the closer my perception is, the closer my perception aligns with objective reality, the better decisions I'm making in business and investments, in my relationship with my children, whatever. That is the way to go forward. Not this, I'm uncomfortable, so I'm just going to deny it. Oh, well, everything's subjective. You know, we could talk about this. I could go on for a lot, but I know we got to wrap this up.
No, not again. Let's keep this going, because this is important, because my truth, I feel like a cat today. How do you go and debate that? I'm fluid. I just don't feel, you know, how am I as a rational person going to debate that? Because I don't even know how you feel. I know how I feel. I know what my sex is. And how do you debate somebody like that? Because this is truly important, because we're getting confused. Our children are getting confused and the adults are going along with it saying, oh, well, I have to really abide by what they say. My daughter wants me to use this or say, how do we debate that? How do we they get insulted, they get offended and it goes up. And like you said, you can't have a discussion with them because it's like, someone's going to lose.
That is probably the easiest and most surefire way to shut down discussion is like, the first one to pull like emotional outrage, like, you know, that person can no longer rationally defend their position. I'm offended and over whatever. It could be anything. It could be the word you used, ideology you're representing, and you can't even have a simple discussion that conforms to reason. Instead, it's, well, I want out, but I want out of the discussion and the appearance that I'm noble and virtuous, right? Rather than be virtuous, I'm going to signal how virtuous I am. And so to do that, it's very simple. We've been given the tools and the tactics. Call the other person something derogatory. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're a flat earther or whatever, you know, and they add all these other things too. Like, it's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. If you're for liberty, oh, you're chauvinistic or bigots or racist, transphobe. What, you simply want to talk about, have a discussion about freedom.
How do you handle it personally? I want to know that.
You probably don't even get lost.
Tell us how to handle it.
I don't got time to waste on this nonsense. But at the same time, that's what we have to do, because we're truth seekers.
We're freedom fighters. That's what we want to do. We want a discussion with people. I love having discussion with people that don't agree with what I'm talking about, because I like to hear their other side. And I'm, as much as I try, I do try to stay calm and listen to the other side, ask questions, but there is moments where it's like you were saying, there's no, you can't have that discussion. Have you ever been successful in that situation?
Yeah, lots of times, especially in my own profession. And I'll tell you where we were talking about that a little bit before with your father. Mm-hmm. I'll say this, there are, where I have the most success is people that I would say are to one extreme of objective reality rather than the other. And I break it into the spiritualists and the materialists. The materialists would be like, they really love appeal to authority and, you know, evidence-based and knowledge is power. Like, well, only knowledge from the authorities. It's very, I have way more success with these people than I do with the like more spiritual appeal to emotion. Everything is kind of wishy-washy. My perception creates reality rather than contributes to, you know, there's a lot of good stuff in there, but the misunderstanding, I'm talking about the extreme, right? Mm-hmm. And the reason I have more success with this side is because it's easier to pick someone up off the ground than it is to pull someone's head out of the clouds. Mm-hmm. And with those people, however, though, those people whose heads are in the clouds, they're less confrontational. You know, they deal with conflict in flight mode, where these like appeal to authority group, they deal with stress with fight mode. So they're ready to enter into a debate. And then it's just up to me to switch it into a discussion. And what I've done for myself is I've just given up all expectations that I will turn them in that moment. And my experience has shown that I'll get like private messages 2 to 3, even some 5 years later saying, I remember this discussion we had and I was out of line. And I really thought like, I understand what you're saying now. And those, you know, you want to unattach yourself, but those victories like kind of feel good. Mm-hmm. And knowing that I'm doing the right thing, but it's taught me to not have any expectations in the moment. Like the seed, you can plant those seeds, but don't expect to harvest, you know, harvest the tomatoes the day you plant the seed. Just be patient, detach yourself from the outcome.
So that is the best advice, because we want that right away. We want them to see what we're talking about. And I agree. And now that you're talking about it, I'm thinking of a lot of conversations we had over the years where many, many years later, all of a sudden they are agreeing with what we're doing. I'm like, hold on a second. And I don't say anything, but I hear what you're saying. And I think that's great. It definitely practice patience.
The way I could recap this whole podcast is there are the five that we're going up against, but shows like this, books like this, mm-hmm. there are so many out there, Joe Rogan. Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that are going against the media. It gives me hope. And to say that there's a lot of different mediums out there, and you see what happened on CNN, they're going down the tubes because people are understanding what's going on. They're understanding the lies and they're understanding it. So if people can see through that, and nobody has any faith in those institutions anyway, the average person has very little faith in them. At least they can go back and there's other channels, other mediums that they can watch. And it's really important to continue to educate ourselves. And for us, it's been, I wouldn't say difficult, but it's challenging to do something against the grain. And you just have to apply logic, apply reason, and work together, work as a team to get it through.
But so. Also, Dr. Travis, you had mentioned to have a purpose in the beginning. When you were making a goal, you have to have a reason behind it. And I think that's why we started homeschooling. I really wasn't sure what the reason was at first because the kids were all little, but I knew there was something. And I look back now, you know, we have one still in college, one's out of college, 4 of them are still home. And I my purpose was there all along. I just couldn't define it as well as I could now. And I think that's super important. So when we're going against other people, we're going against what normal people are doing, I should say, there has to be a reason behind it. And we have to be, we have to be sure of it.
Yeah. It's much easier to stand your ground when you know what your ground is. If you don't know what your purpose is and you don't have a purpose statement and you know it word for word and you can recite it on command, then you really don't have a purpose.
Mm-hmm. Where can the listeners get a hold of you?
The best is always to reach me at restoringreason.com. If you go to restoringreason.com, you can actually download the first chapter of the book as well. So no strings attached, see what it's all about. If maybe you like it. And just like Julia said, it's a very easy read. Mm-hmm. It's meant to be that way.
I appreciate that. Some of these books are so, I mean, I did look at the Trivium, the Sister Mary, what was her name?
Sister Mary.
Yeah. And I was just like, woof. Like, okay, Gina, you let me know what that says.
Well, I think what my goal is for everyone listening to the show is to really take a step back, use your emotions intelligently. I mean, let them fuel you, let them guide you, let them really make you feel passionate about it, but don't let them guide all the decisions, and take a step back and use logic and use reason. And this is long-termism. You're going to continue to make these decisions, and these small decisions you're making are going to affect you in the long term. So try to make wise, intelligent, logical, rational decisions throughout every part of your life, with your family, with your faith, with your finances, with your health, with your fitness, and try to encapsulate it throughout and take a step back. And it's okay if you're going against what everyone else is doing at some point. Like Dr. Travis just said, you need to have a purpose, you need to have a reason why. So I want to thank you once again for being on the show. And, you know, once again, restoring reason, go out there, pick it up, and let's start restoring reason, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. In Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board. In Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course.
Right again. Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
For a limited time, visit Miro.com/brainstorm now and get a free business plan trial to unlock even more brainstorming tools like private mode and voting. That's Miro.com/brainstorm now.